Welcome to the Personal Computer Show. Today is June the 17th, 2020. We started the stay-at-home lockdown at the beginning of the spring. Next week is the first day of summer. I feel like I've been in the Twilight Zone. I'm Hank Key, and my colleague is Joe King. Do you know who has your personal data? Do you know how Facebook, Google, Amazon, and other big tech companies are using your personal data? Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on prn.fm, streaming on the Internet. Podcasts of the program is available on prn.fm on the Internet. To listen to the live program on the telephone each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, the number is 641-793-7091. You can leave us a message with your question or comment at hank@pcradioshow.org. Many organizations are flooded with new tech purchases for work-from-home employees. They face a big question now. What are they going to do with all that equipment? Tons of equipment were purchased that may or may not be usable in an existing work environment. As the coronavirus spread and Americans were forced to shelter in place, the month of March saw U.S. sales of computers increase by 40%, notebook sales by over 50%, and keyboard sales by 64%. With many workers now returning to the office, companies and government agencies will be forced to deal with a mountain of new equipment purchased for the work-from-home period. Organizations may look at this situation as an opportunity rather than as a headache. In recent weeks, numerous businesses and government agencies are faced with the data risk, tech headaches, and challenges associated with transitioning to work-from-home arrangements, especially with an influx of new technology purchased for employees working remotely. Now, as many workers begin returning to the office, there is a need to outline a strategy for companies and government agencies to turn their rushed and often expensive technology purchases into a return on investment through a technique called asset refresh. An industry survey firm evaluated a group noted that many organizational technology managers were caught flat-footed in react mode by the pandemic, unprepared for the scale of workforce displacement, while some companies might look to dispose of unnecessary assets or donate excess hardware to charities. There is another path forward in considering whether to move up the technology asset refresh cycle. There is a huge opportunity for organizations to plan and strategically replace outdated and otherwise inferior equipment in the pre-coronavirus office setting with new hardware that was purchased so that employees could continue to work from home. The coronavirus pandemic has provided an unprecedented occasion for businesses to update their technology inventory with a strategy called asset refresh. Many businesses made purchases that they were not prepared for because it wasn't in the budget, and it was done in haste to accommodate a remote workforce. Coming out of the pandemic, they now have a tight budget, and there are questions they have to ask and address, which is the financial bottom line of the IT investments. Do they have a plan in place for turning these new technology assets into a return on investment? If not, this is a time to stop reacting and start planning. When unnecessary assets are added to the organization, time and money is wasted. Under normal circumstances, a carefully researched acquisition plan is created before any hardware and software purchase are made by any organization. In the role of the IT manager, they have to evaluate asset refresh cycles and the life cycle of an IT inventory. The goal for total cost of ownership is to calculate or estimate the cost associated with an asset throughout its whole life cycle, encompassing First the acquisition, then use, and then finally disposal. Sometimes it is more costly to maintain old machines and software than it is to upgrade. In other cases, it's more cost-effective to update old IT assets instead of replacing it with new ones due to hidden costs. In returning to business as usual, companies and government agencies will need to closely evaluate their technology inventory and decide where to cut costs and avoid hidden fees associated with new purchases. It is likely that a newfound emphasis will remain on asset mobility, remote workforces, cloud services, and data protection. Therefore, having an IT manager develop a strong plan for IT asset acquisition and disposal and developing strategies for generating return on investment with IT assets would be vital for business owners to help recoup revenue lost during the pandemic. Let's hope that by the end of the day that there is equipment that it cannot be integrated into an existing organization that is donated to charity for their use. Zoom announced this past week that those who use the video platform for free will no longer have encrypted calls, and this new change will happen sooner than later. The reasoning behind this change, according to the company, is that they want to be able to comply and work with local law enforcement agencies as well as the FBI in the event that Zoom would be used for malicious reasons. Those who use Zoom for free merely need to provide an email address, therefore not providing adequate information in order to help verify the identity of somebody. This new rollout will only provide that end-to-end encryption to individuals with full verifiable accounts. Well, why is this important? Zoom could ask for the same information from the free users and give them the same encryption as their paid users. Well, you may disagree, but this seems more like a marketing tactic than a compliance concern, and for that reason, I'm scratching my head and I'm a little wary of Zoom. Don't get me wrong. It's a great platform for many during this pandemic, but considering the handling of past security concerns, and more importantly, how they're addressing these concerns, you may want to consider other communication platforms for your use. This is what Zoom had said. Zoom has used and continues to use encryption technology on its platform for all users. That's a 256-bit GCM encryption, which is one of the most secure encryption standards used today, is currently enabled systems-wide and available to all users, both free and paid. Regarding contacting law enforcement, Zoom only responds to valid law enforcement requests. When we receive a request for information, Zoom's policy is to comply only if the request follows a valid legal process and there is proper jurisdiction. Zoom's policy precludes responding to requests where there is inadequate legal process, for example, when authorities lack jurisdiction or when requests are overbroad. Zoom does not eavesdrop on users' meetings. We also do not let law enforcement listen into meetings. Any reports to the contrary are categorically false. Zoom does not proactively monitor meeting content, and we do not have backdoors where anyone, including employees, can enter meetings without being visible to others via the meeting participant list. As to the end-to-end encryption, this is still a work in progress. We are currently listening to feedback from child safety advocates, civil liberties organizations, encryption experts, and law enforcement, and will provide an updated white paper incorporating this feedback soon. So, how encrypted are Zoom meetings really? The service's mixed messages have frustrated cryptographers as the U.S. government and other sensitive organizations increasingly depend on it. The video conferencing company Zoom has seen its star rise exponentially during the COVID-19 pandemic as friends and co-workers increasingly turn to the service for a communication lifeline. With this notoriety, though, has come mounting scrutiny of Zoom security and privacy practices. Zoom is safe for most people,
but as the United States federal government and other sensitive organizations ramp up the use of the service, a clearer accounting of its encryption is due. That's harder to achieve than it should be because Zoom has sent conflicting signals about its encryption approach. A report in The Intercept last week noted that based on its own technical white paper, Zoom has falsely, yes, I repeat falsely, marketed one of the features as making meetings end-to-end encrypted. That would mean video call data is encrypted at all times in transit, such that not even Zoom could access it. The company has since admitted that this is not the case and now uses the word encrypted instead of end-to-end encrypted. You have to be careful with the verbiage that people use. When meetings have the settings enabled, Zoom still, though, hasn't removed its end-to-end encrypted pitch everywhere on its website in marketing materials. And in marketing material that was posted, Zoom attempted to resolve the confusion. In light of the recent interest in their encryption practices, they want to start by apologizing for the confusion that they have caused by incorrectly suggesting that Zoom meetings were capable of using end-to-end encryption. Zoom has always strived to use encryption to protect content in as many scenarios as possible, and they said that in that spirit, they use the term end-to-end encryption. They said they never intended to deceive any of their customers, but they recognize that there is a discrepancy between commonly accepted definition of end-to-end encryption and how they're using it. Saying that they don't decrypt it at any point, does that mean that they cannot decrypt it at any point? But in some ways, their marketing approach complicates things further. Zoom can add comprehensive encryption only if everyone in the meeting is logged in through one of the company's apps. If someone joins a Zoom meeting through a regular phone call, for example, Zoom can't extend its encryption to the legacy of telephony network. Further, with the exception of those connections and a caveat for recorded Zoom meetings, they encrypt all video, audio, screen sharing, and chat content at the sending client and do not decrypt it at any point before it reaches the receiving clients, which starts to sound a lot like end-to-end encryption again. Their marketing post also includes a diagram that seems to depict Zoom system as being fully end-to-end encrypted for most audio and video calls. What can you say? Because they apologize for the confusion, admit that it's not end-to-end, and then go on arguing how it is end-to-end? I don't know. It's confusing as hell. Based on this approach, it's been pointed out that the system does not meet the criteria of being end-to-end encrypted because of key management, the logistics of generating, using, and storing the keys that encrypt and decrypt data. Zoom's marketing currently manages and stores all the keys involved in the user data encryption in its own cloud infrastructure. By definition, this means that Zoom is not end-to-end encrypted. Even if meetings remain encrypted on their whole route across the internet, because Zoom could use the keys it holds to decrypt the data during that journey, Zoom has extensive internal controls in place to keep anyone from using the keys to access users' video or audio meetings. Saying that they don't decrypt it at any point does not mean they cannot decrypt at any point. An analysis of Zoom's encryption scheme published by Citizens Lab at the University of Toronto shows that Zoom does generate and hold all keys itself on key management system. The report notes that most of Zoom's developers are based in China and some of its key management infrastructure is in that country, meaning keys used to encrypt your meetings could be generated there. It's also unclear how Zoom generates keys and whether they're adequately random or might be predictable. It would help if Zoom was more clear about how keys are generated and transmitted. Citizens Lab's investigation found that every Zoom meeting is encrypted with one key that is distributed to all meeting participants, and it doesn't change until everyone has left the room. Conceptually, this is a legitimate way to encrypt video calls, but its overall security depends on a number of factors – including what happens in situations where only some people join or leave the meeting after it has started. Citizen Lab found that the key does not change when some participants join and leave, and only refreshes when everyone has left a meeting. Citizen Lab also found that Zoom uses an unexpected configuration for its transport protocol used in delivering audio and video over the internet. Improvising alternatives in this way is often called rolling your own cryptography, typically a red flag given how easy it is to make mistakes that create vulnerabilities. It sounds like Zoom solves a lot of the hard problems but didn't go all the way. After reviewing Citizen Lab's findings, all the cryptographers have emphasized that Zoom's centralized key management system and opaque key generation is the biggest issue with the company's past end-to-end encryption claims, as well as its current muddled messaging on the subject. Other enterprise video conferencing services take a similar approach to managing keys. The issue for Zoom is simply that the company made claims that evoke a much more secure and desirable offering. Adding to the confusion, Zoom's blog post claims that the company can still make many of the guarantees that come with true end-to-end encryption. Zoom has never built a mechanism to decrypt live meetings for lawful intercept purposes, nor have they inserted their employees or others into meetings without being reflected in the participant list. It seems clear, though, that governments or law enforcement could ask the company to build such tools and the infrastructure would allow it. Marketing's notes from Zoom offers a way for customers to manage their own private keys, an important step towards end-to-end encryption, by physically installing Zoom infrastructure like servers on their own premises, a cloud-based option for users to do their own key management through Zoom's remote servers is coming later in the year. Running the entire Zoom infrastructure, clients, servers, connectors, in-house, this can only be done by big organizations. What can the little guys do? And for the cloud-based option, this kind of sounds like end-to-end encryption, but who knows? Maybe they mean something else if it is, then why not just say so? End-to-end encryption will be available later this year. Maybe. The fact that implementing end-to-end encryption with the kinds of features that Zoom offers is very difficult. A free Zoom account can host calls with up to 100 participants. Enterprise Plus tier users can have up to 1,000 people on the line. By comparison, it took Apple years to get end-to-end encryption to work with 32 participants on FaceTime. Google's Enterprise Focus Hangouts Meet platform, which doesn't offer end-to-end encryption, can only handle up to 250 participants per call. For most users, in most situations, Zoom's current security seems adequate. Given the service's rapid proliferation, though, including into high-sensitivity settings like government and healthcare, it's important that the company give a real explanation of what encryption protections it does and doesn't offer. The mixed messages aren't cutting it. And remember, they just made the announcement that they are dropping encrypted calls for those who are using the service for free, and this change will happen pretty soon. Is this something that you might feel that you're going to miss? Well, since they don't do real end-to-end encryption, I don't think it really matters. But you still have to be careful with how you use Zoom. Presenting Benjamin Rockwell with his IT Pro Series. Differences when it comes to working from home with different businesses.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time for business. This is where I give you tidbits from my current experience, my past experience, some of the future experience of being a 30-year IT professional. What do I say, future experience? Well, I can look ahead. I know some of the things that are going to be coming at us. We're going to be talking in the coming weeks, I'm sure, about the new normal and working from home, because a lot more companies are going to be sticking with what we've learned over the course of the last few weeks, months, about working from home. And there is a little bit of a difference between the businesses, how they've dealt with working from home. And this is something I know is going to be a problem as we move forward in the future. Big corporations, start off with them. The big corporations, they've had to make some adjustments. They've had to do an increase in bandwidth. They have had to change some of their policies. It used to be certain people would work from home. If you wanted to work from home, you had to have a VP approval. You know, an office is vary, and it could be a director, and it could be an SVP, and the corporate structures are named differently in different worlds. That particular one is from the finance world, yes, where there are a lot of VPs and a lot of SVPs. I've worked in the finance world many times over the course of the years. It could be a matter of your manager had to say yes or no before. Now, everybody's saying yes because we have to deal with this. But there have been minor tech issues along the way. It's a departure from the status quo, and the IT department really has the resources to handle a lot of this in the bigger corporations. Oh, we need to drop out another 1,000 laptops. Okay, well, we need to order them. They'll be here in a couple of days. Everybody who doesn't have laptops, trust me, we will get them. It's okay. You're getting paid right now. Go home and snack on some bonbons and watch soap operas. I'm sorry, that wasn't meant as a dig against anybody who would normally do that. It's as a guy, you know, we also eat bonbons, and my uncle was just fascinated by soap operas. So yeah, medium businesses. Is some of the above, but now let's move into that. It becomes a little bit more difficult. The medium businesses, they've had the same kind of setup, but not as many people. So there's many more hurdles, and there's a lot of training, a lot of support, and frequently a lot less laptops. You know, the smaller a business is, the more desktops they have, the less laptops they have. Changes are happening quickly. Companies are having to adapt. They're having to realize that we have a whole new set of rules here. And yes, the medium companies have had to learn more about how to manage remote workers, how to handle the technology changes, how to handle a lot of these different things. Fortunately, there have been some people who've worked in the larger corporations that know how it was done in the larger corporations, and they're bringing some of that experience at a very needed time to the medium businesses. The medium businesses, they've had to roll out more laptops. They've had to suggest things like, you're going to take your desktop home. You're going to take your computer, whatever it is that you have right now, you're going to package it up. You're going to take it home. You're going to set it up at home. Now, you need to be able to do this all on your own because we can't send out an IT person to take care of it. We can't even put somebody on the phone. You're going to come in last. And by coming in last, that means you're not going to be getting work done and your boss is going to be noticing. And that starts to get into a scary little world there, doesn't it? Let's move into the small businesses that were not prepared. Most of the small businesses were not prepared for something like this. Many small businesses are based in simple new ideas, or they're based in manufacturing, or they're based in a customer service sector like a pizza place. Sometimes these smaller companies do not have the IT work staff, so they've called in consultants. As a matter of fact, many companies under 100 people in size, they're already relying on consultants. That already starts to touch into that medium business category. And to me, it's also a matter of a mindset. You can have a company that has 5,000 people and they think like a small business. You can have a company that has 100 people and they think like a big corporation. But for the most part, small businesses, they lack the IT people. They frequently are not tech-centric at all. As a matter of fact, the few that are tech-centric enough to need people on computers is the area where I'm most concerned. They don't have the flexible budget to say, let's buy everyone a $1,000 laptop, let's upgrade our internet speed, connect up a VPN, secure everything, and have everybody work from home. I think a digital divide may occur through all of this, and I'm not sure how we're all going to fare in the end. If you run into a situation where you have spare time, I'm going to suggest there are a number of different learning places out on the internet. I'm going to name off two. LinkedIn has LinkedIn Learning, and there's something called Pluralsight, but there's many of them that will allow you to keep your tech skills up to date and honed. And at this time, I think everybody needs it. All of us need it. This is Benjamin Rockwell. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin. Working from home will be one of the new norms when there is a full return to work. In some cases, as reported, the work from home for a call center in the Philippines resulted in isolation, and it was a big change from working in an office with hundreds of colleagues nearby who could help troubleshoot problems. Adding to the problem is there's not a strong technical infrastructure support in the home to operate effectively. Benjamin Rockwell reports that a survey of Fortune 500 CEOs of major American companies say working from home does work. A major finding is that there is no real loss in productivity. The cost for brick and mortar for office housing workers is a significant factor in the operating budget. For Americans with questions about their bank accounts, mobile phone service, or e-commerce orders, getting answers have long involved talking on the phone with someone overseas, where English-speaking operators handle queries, complaints, and other calls. U.S. companies outsourcing this kind of customer service benefits from lower labor costs while counting on their overseas operators to keep customers' confidential information safe within the walls of the call centers. Now that the coronavirus is testing that arrangement. After the Philippine government imposed a strict quarantine in March, call centers had permission to keep skeleton crews at their offices, but they had to send thousands of other employees to work from home. Even as lockdowns end in the island nation, social distancing rules remain in effect. Many staffers won't be returning to call centers and instead will be answering customer questions from their home. That decision has forced Alorica, Inc., a major operator of call centers in the country, to work with clients to revise their agreements about what kinds of information workers can handle outside the office. The closely held company based in Irvine, California, has about 40,000 employees in the Philippines, half of its total workforce, and must limit occupancy at its 22 sites there to 50% of capacity to reduce the risk of workplace becoming COVID-19 hotspots. Some jobs, therefore, must go off-site. The ones that are really sensitive, they're trying to keep in the office. But if there's no credit card information, credit information, health information, those are the ones that could be done at home. The call center business is a crucial one for the Philippines, which accounts for 8% of gross domestic product and directly employing 1.3 million people. And this is according to HSBC Holdings. So the nation is relying on Alorica and other operators to quickly come up with the solutions to keep the industry growing. Reopening the offices safely ain't going to be easy. The New York-based management director of Macro Trends Group, a consulting firm of Bain & Company, said that these call centers are typically densely occupied, which makes it challenging to protect workers' health. Just as the act of singing seems to spread the virus through droplets in the air, Talking on the phone for hours may be a higher risk. You can imagine that speaking all day would raise the risk of transmission. As many continue to work from home, staffers are having to become more self-reliant when they have questions about their work. Without managers around, if you need any support, it's not given instantly. You have to troubleshoot yourself sometimes. The isolation is a big change from the old ways of working in an office with hundreds of colleagues nearby. It's only you. You don't have anyone to talk to. Working from home isn't a viable long-term option for others. Paris-based Teleperformance has 47,000 employees in the Philippines, about 14% of the company's workforce, and many live in places with unreliable internet connections and unstable electricity supplies. They said that their clients are going to ask them to bring people back simply because the infrastructure of work from home in the Philippines is not the best environment for contact center work. If there is a four-hour power interruption in the facility, they have backup generators to ensure that they won't have any problems. That's one reason why Teleperformance is moving ahead with expansion plans, including a new office opening late in the year that will house 2,000 workers. To meet social distancing needs, the facility will have studios for virtual training of new hires and coaching of current employees and work that managers used to do one-on-one. The company is also shifting several of the social events it organizes for staff members. Many of them are in their 20s with limited opportunities to socialize because they work such odd hours, serving customers in different time zones, with everything including yoga classes and karaoke nights moving online. Regardless of whether call center workers work from home or central office, the industry could face a growing risk if clients hit by coronavirus-slowed economies try to cut costs by replacing Philippine operations with chatbots powered by artificial intelligence. Recessions have historically accelerated automation, and habits may have shifted, which give companies some freedom to use those potentially less expensive services. The economic pressure makes it more compelling. For now, the Philippines call center staffers will need to get used to these new workplace rules. After the government eased the lockdown, Alorica employees returning to the office received small welcome packages that included both washable and disposable masks, disinfectant, and guidelines on how to maintain social distance. One worker got something more, a reprimand from a security guard for getting too close to a colleague. Well, it's something they're going to have to deal with, and they may have some hard times, but they'll have to figure it out.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time where we get down to business. We talk about the different things that are going on in regards to work, our employment, the world in general, as far as computers and technology, and how it applies to us, the employees. There was recently a survey sent out by Fortune to the Fortune 500 CEOs. It was in regards to how they feel that they are dealing with the coronavirus, how the coronavirus is going to impact us over the course of the next few years in regards to the business world. Now, I'm not going to get into all of the details from that, but there was something that was very telling. There was a question that was open-ended, and it is this: the single most important thing the crisis taught me is, and I'm going to read off four of these, and the first three don't apply so much to computers and technology, which is what I deal with. But let's go through these. A business cannot wait for the transformation it knows it needs. Now, we can apply that to the technology that is needed, like VPNs and being able to work from home and things like that. But I want to move on. Leadership and values matter always, but especially in a crisis. I love that one. I really enjoy the fact that they're thinking about the idea of the values mattering, of leadership mattering in a crisis. The next one, the meaning of the word essential. Oh, wow. You know, and that gets kind of weighty. But the most important one that I took away here was working from home works. Let me say that again. The Fortune 500 CEOs, they all got together, and in amongst the most important things that they have been taught through this crisis, amongst those, working from home works. I will tell you that we have gone through a number of different ideas as far as, you know, what is working from home like? Is it going to work? There are companies out there that have toyed with this for an employee to do this, you know, once a week. And a particularly valuable employee that wants to move off to North Dakota because they're headed towards retirement, you know, but they're still a valuable employee. Working from home will definitely work for them. But can we apply that across the board? And the answer is, according to the Fortune 500 CEOs, yes. The entire workplace is starting to evolve. It's starting to change. We are going to become more global. We are going to become a different kind of an employee over the course of the coming decade or decades. It's going to be very rapid for the next year or two. I mean, let's look at how many people are working from home right now. Many major corporations, to keep the wheels spinning, they're going through and they're saying, we can't have you come into the office because you could get sick and that all creates a problem. So you're going to work from home. A lot of companies are doing that. Yes, there are certain companies, certain different business industries, which, okay, the healthcare industry, you're not exactly going to work from home. Or are you? So my wife actually works for a hospital. She's been working from home. Why? Because her job, well, essential to the operation of the hospital, is not essential for her to be in the office. She can do everything via remote, via Zoom meetings or whatever the equivalent is that they have there. She can do a lot of phone calls. She can do all of the different paperwork and everything else that she needs to do via remote. My particular position, as a matter of fact, the company I work for, has sent a lot of people to work from home. I'm in IT. I can work from home. I'm able to reach out to all of the different bits and pieces of information and all of the different people that I deal with on a regular basis from home. The reality is, I was already working in an office where, yes, I had people part of my team that were nearby, and yes, I could chat with them in person, but it wasn't really necessary. Because we all frequently, even if we were just a few seats away, would move to our instant messaging app and we would send emails to each other because we had to include greater amounts of people in the messages that were going forward. For us to work together as a team, for us to mesh throughout, we had to communicate in writing versus face to face. Sure, it was great to go have a cup of tea with my, you know, my buddy over there. But you know what? That's something that we're going to have to deal without. We still have that instant messaging. We can still remain friends and we can still interact with everybody. It's just a different kind of interaction. It's a different kind of workplace. This entire COVID coronavirus situation is changing the way we work and will work. And I am excited to see what happens next. This is Benjamin Rockwell. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin. The takeaway is work from home does work, and there are factors that need to be addressed in order to have efficient and effective productivity. Presenting Marty Winston, All Hands on Tech, Doodads for Dads. You only have 3 days left to get Dad something for Father's Day. Marty Winston has some last-minute ideas to share.
Did your dad have to work from home? Is he still doing some work from home? When he's on Zoom or Skype or whatever, does he sound like, the alien spy from a bad science fiction movie?
You know what I mean.
Yeah. Then you may want to think about getting him a good USB microphone. Maybe even one of the podcaster kits. He'll sound more like the man in command. Or at least, let him think so. And if he is doing some work from home and home gets noisy, whether it's people or pets or lawnmowers or entertainment, check out the Rifleman model of Pro Ears hearing protectors from Altus Brands. These things can tame the abruptly loud noise of jackhammers or shotguns, and this specific model builds in a Bluetooth headset with really good mic quality. That's the Pro Ears Rifleman. Now, about your dad's handset. Want to make it handier? Several charger brands offer cordless QI charging, and some have models where the phone is leaning against an easel stand, usually with dual coils that can let you put the phone sitting there the tall way, in portrait mode, or the wide way in landscape mode. You can even find easel-back QI models that support QC3 quick charging. And there's a gizmo called iRoller, small letter I in front of the word roller, and it's really good at cleaning screens. Later, rinsing it under cold water is all it takes to make a dirty one like new. That's iRoller, and don't roll your eyes until he tries one and tells you how good it is. A lot of dads got pretty disconnected while sheltering at home, and there are some things you could get him that might help with that. Think about a desk calendar that has a fresh page for every day and shows both the date and the day of the week. Paper's fine, but it doesn't have to be paper. There are electronic calendars and electronic clocks that display day and date, or, if your allowance can handle it, a wristwatch that shows all that. One other option, an indoor-outdoor weather station. Many of those also show day and date and time, and just might help Dad think about getting outside now and again. Before he heads there, though, think about getting him a label printer, either handheld or a USB desktop model, especially the kind that uses cartridge-load labels. Keeping things organized gets tough when you can't read your own scribbles, or when you never got around to making those scribbles in the first place. He can organize his tools, his filing folders, mark down which remote goes with which product, and which AC adapter goes with which product, and for each of those boxes of parts that he saves, which one has what kind of stuff in it. Think about getting Dad 2 ballpoint pens, one a little classier than he usually carries, and one that's just a grunt pen, but the kind that can write on anything anytime. In other words, one he'll use every day, and one that, until he ever dresses up to go out again, will just stay put away. There's an acronym you may want to think about, EDC. It's short for Everyday Carry. Like maybe that ballpoint pen, but what else? Top of that list might be an LED pocket flashlight. Maybe something that runs on a single AA cell. Those can be pretty bright, and they're not terribly expensive. And some dads just might find and use that before they figure out how to turn the phone into a flashlight, or for that matter, try to find where they left the phone when they don't have a flashlight to help them look. Depending on your dad's daily deeds and needs, there are other everyday carry items that might be a good fit. A lighter, a money clip, a loud whistle, a flat case magnifying glass, or maybe one other thing. You may be able to find him a shirt pocket-sized, leather-bound pocket notepad. Sure, he might take notes on it instead of taking notes on the phone, or use it for notes when he doesn't have his phone with him. Unlike a phone, He can take a note that he makes on the pad, tear it out, and hand it to somebody else. And here's a nice, tricky use. Write down a label or caption and hold it in front of the camera when you take a snapshot, especially one that can benefit from that little extra bit of information. One more thing that might be an everyday carry or might be something just to keep near the computer, a spare USB drive, because it can be a faster, easier, and more sure-footed way to shuttle files than doing uploads or downloads. And it's also easier to lock away. Dad can even use that label printer to identify what's on it. Does your dad ever drop things like tools or little pieces of hardware, and do those things always land in the most inconvenient place imaginable? Think about getting a super magnet on a telescoping rod. Those magnetic pickups are, they're really handy. Another gadget that he might find fun with is a battery-powered, handheld fly swatter with an electrified zapper screen. Watch Dad turn into a hunter. He may even let you zap a few, too. Have you ever seen your dad flip over a foot-long ruler to cover a longer measurement or try to walk from one place to another to guess the distance? This is hardware heaven. Take a look at all the tape measures with cool new features you may never have seen before. And there are modestly priced laser distance measures that you can clip into a shirt pocket. Some bigger ones, too. Speaking of work, did you ever hear of the brand Works, W-O-R-X? They just sent a couple of goodies that are each in their own way cool. One of them is cool in a traditional way. It's a fan, one that you can run either with one of their 20-volt tool batteries or by plugging in an AC adapter. It has two speeds, a swivel base, a hang hook, and all the nimble stuff you might expect from a fan that's designed to go to a job site. But hold on. It comes with a 20-volt tool battery and a charger for it. But the thing to love is that you can also set it up so the AC adapter can both power the fan and charge a battery that's still on the fan. Okay, so there you are with a running fan and a charged battery. Any other tricks? Well, they also sent a small adapter that you can attach to one of those 20-volt tool batteries you're not using at the moment, and it has two USB charging ports, so Dad can keep his phone and something else charged up when it's one of those out working with the tools days. Again, the fan kit and the USB charging adapter are each from WORX Works. Speaking of those out working with the tools days, there are so many sweet products from Klein Tools that it's like a candy land for people who need tools or organizing or things that go with tools. And in that latter regard, here's a nominee. Gloves. Klein has touchscreen compatible gloves with either smooth or sandy nitrile dip for great gripping and cut resistance scores of 2 or 4. And their leather gloves add reinforced palms and knuckle-line bruise protection. Chances are that Dad hasn't been able to get away for a vacation anytime recently. And while you may not be able to send him on one, here's something fun that's affordable on even a meager allowance. Get Dad a package of those little paper umbrellas that go into fancy vacation cocktails. You can add to that, too, if you want, with colorful swizzle sticks, a small jar of maraschino cherries, and an island-themed drink coaster. Now, I'm not your dad, and you don't have to send me anything if you don't want to. I'm just saying. So, you've heard the list of ideas, you know, just in case you started with no idea at all of what to get for Dad. Next time, with COVID-19 in mind, and with some scamming fast buck artists, well, to put it another way, with so many claims about so many technologies for assassinating every germ in the place, and with so many of those claims leaving out important stuff, like that the cure can hurt you, you'll want to be here for Germ Kill Tech, the good, the bad, and the bogus, with all those germs you don't want to catch. And all those con artists you don't want catching you. Next week's segment is the one thing you will want to catch.
Thank you, Marty. Hey, Marty, you left out a most valuable gift that you can give on Father's Day. A virtual hug. Public service announcements. Computer club meetings in the New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut tri-state region. Some of the computer clubs have begun to schedule their general monthly meetings through teleconferencing. For updated information, visit the website of the computer club. The Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey will have a presentation on Tech Talk this Friday, June the 19th, at 7 p.m. via Amazon Chime, that's C-H-I-M-E, and their website is acgnj.org. The Brookdale Computer Users Group will meet Thursday, June the 25th. Meeting time is 6:45 p.m. via Zoom virtual meeting, and the topic of presentation is Internet of Things and RFID tagging. Their website is bcug.com. The Westchester PC Users Group has a meeting on Thursday, July 2nd. Meeting time is 7 p.m. via Zoom virtual meeting, and the title of presentation is SharePower, S-H-E-E-R, and SharePower is a free business programming language. The website is wpcug.org. The New York Amateur Computer Club will have a presentation on Thursday, July the 9th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. via Zoom virtual meeting, and the presentation is WIX, W-I-X. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on prn.fm, streaming on the Internet. Podcasts of the program is available on prn.fm on the Internet. And if you have any questions for us, just send us an email address to hank at pcradioshow.org. As we are coming out of the stay-at-home order, we thank the first responders, all of whom deserve our appreciation and admiration. That includes healthcare workers such as doctors and nurses. Also deserving of our gratitude are the police officers, emergency medical technicians, firefighters, and others who continue to respond to calls and medical emergencies. Just a reminder, wherever you are, we come together at 7 p.m. each day to give thanks and gratitude to the medical staff and essential workers. Open your window, ring a bell, or make a joyful sound to show your appreciation for all those working on the front lines. In the meantime, stay in touch and remember to do regular backups. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of Joe King, Michael Horowitz, Marty Winston, and Benjamin Rockwell, we thank you for listening, and we thank you for your support. Stay safe and healthy until we meet again, same time, same station, next week.